Good morning. Please be seated. In our last case today, 2023-1024, State of Ohio versus James Echols. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Jaquith. The bench this morning might look a little different. Sitting for Justice Dieters is Judge Carol Ann Robb of the 7th District Court of Appeals. Judge Robb, thank you for serving today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. When the state seeks to introduce evidence the defendant threatened or attempted to intimidate a witness, such evidence also raises the possibility that the fact finder could conclude that the defendant has a propensity toward violence. And if, as here, the charges that the defendant is facing involve acts of violence, then the same concerns that were identified in State versus Hartman will be present. Without limiting guidance from the trial court, the jurors may be far more inclined to conclude that the defendant...
So is this just really about whether or not there's a limiting instruction? Is that really all you're asking for here?
At the back end, yes. Before we get to that, the 404B analysis.
There's this whole 404B analysis, but it doesn't seem there's anything there. I mean, 404B says that this evidence has to have a can't be introduced to show actions in conformity with character, but rather has to have some propensity relevance. And in this case, we've already said that this type of evidence has that it's admissible to show it's admissible to show consciousness of guilt. So that's satisfied. You talk about in your brief the need for a 403B analysis, but that applies to all evidence. 403B isn't limited to 404. All evidence has to be more probative than prejudicial. So I'm a little lost on what the focus on 404 here is.
Well, I think the best response is that it's not just consciousness of guilt, that it's also a potentially violent act or threatened violent act, which can be used to demonstrate propensity or argue propensity, which is precisely what the state did here.
Right, but 404B is satisfied if it has a propensity purpose, and our case law has held that this type of evidence does.
I don't believe 404B is satisfied if it has a propensity purpose. 404B is satisfied if it meets one of the enumerated legitimate reasons other than propensity for being introduced, and that's what State versus Hartman made clear.
But we have said that this is admissible for another purpose, so it satisfies that.
But the state never identified what purpose it wanted to use this evidence for.
Well, the purpose was consciousness of guilt, right? I mean, there's no dispute about that. You don't.
Well, our view of if it's admissible at all, it's an other act. It's not charged. It arguably constitutes something that suggests that the defendant has a propensity towards violence. If the state wants to introduce that, first it has to clear the 403 hurdle, then it has to be introduced for a proper purpose.
All evidence has to clear a 403 hurdle.
Absolutely.
There's nothing special about that.
But not all evidence is other act evidence, suggesting
that... The 403 doesn't just apply to other act evidence.
Correct. That's the next step, is the 404B analysis, which the trial court refused to do here, even though
that's why I don't understand. Why did the trial court have to do any separate 404B analysis when...
To identify the proper purpose for which the evidence is being introduced.
But we've already said that consciousness of guilt is a proper purpose for
threats. But that's case law that predated Hartman.
So you're saying the trial court would have needed to say, or that the state would have needed to say, we're offering this evidence to show consciousness of guilt?
Yeah, or it could be construed as knowledge, like guilty knowledge, because the word knowledge is identified in 404B.
But you're saying that needed to be said as opposed to?
Just as in Hartman, the state threw out a laundry list of reasons why we want this out there, and
but in Hartman, it was specifically other acts or bad acts that was supposed to the analysis to show that if the defendant in that case committed a sexual act on someone else in the past, he's doing it again now. These are not the same acts.
But Mr. Eccles was charged with violent acts, and the threat or intimidation evidence also suggests that he's capable of violence.
But isn't that, but it seems like you're conflating the consciousness of guilt evidence and consciousness of guilt acts and bad acts.
Depends on the nature of the evidence. Okay. Flight would be consciousness of guilt that doesn't mm-hmm. include propensity toward violence. The threats or intimidation is consciousness of guilt that does include a potential for finding the defendant has a propensity toward violence.
So you're saying there has to be a distinction, the type of consciousness of guilt. Some consciousness
yes.
of guilt evidence has to be vetted via the Hartman.
Yeah, and if it's an arguably violent act or threat, and particularly when the defendant is facing charges involving violence, then yes.
Okay. Counsel, these alleged acts in this case happened after. He had pled not guilty, and it was awaiting trial on these charges, right?
Correct.
Okay, so there are other acts unrelated to what he was charged with, right?
Yes.
And so let's get to this consciousness of guilt. Why are all acts of intimidation unequivocally consciousness of guilt? Isn't it imaginable that and a innocent person may stupidly engage in witness intimidation, which may or may not evidence any type of probative value towards his guilt on the underlying charges.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. I believe that's where Judge Bergeron was going with his concurrence. I think it depends on the specifics of the evidence in question.
So what you're saying here is Hartman, and I'm a big fan of the Hartman decision by Justice DeWine, and I see it as requiring upon courts to engage in stringent analysis before you take the step of allowing. It doesn't say courts shouldn't allow other act evidence in. They should, but only after engaging in a stringent analysis of, first of all, does it meet one of the purposes under 404B? And then, that's not enough, you have to engage in a 403 analysis.
Correct.
And that was not done in this case.
Correct.
All right. Okay, thank you.
But even if we would agree with you that the Hartman analysis wasn't done, wasn't this error harmless?
The state has not argued as such.
Okay.
And it's their burden to show that it's a harmless error. They have not argued harmlessness, so one potential read of that is that they're conceding that if there was error, it's not harmless. Beyond that, I would go toward the eyewitness IDs at first at the scene where there were, I believe there were at least six people who witnessed the shooting. The state did not put them on the stand. None of the identifiers from the individual on the stand lined up with my client. Nobody said that a tall, light-skinned African-American male was one of the shooters.
So going back to Justice DeWine's question, you stated something to the effect of, but the state didn't offer that it was being admitted for evidence of conscious guilt. So as it's being admitted at the trial court, nothing was said, no arguments, no debate was going on before the trial court judge?
No, not to my recollection.
Were you objecting to the admission of that evidence?
There was the decision on the motion in limine was the same day the trial started, and the trial judge's phrasing was, we're going to deem that to be admitted, or that will be, I think he said that will be admitted, that evidence.
So in your statement to Justice DeWine, if the judge is saying that, is the lawyer arguing, well, they have to state why it's being admitted?
Yes, she cited Hartman, and indicated, I don't recall her direct oral colloquy regarding Hartman.
But she didn't say consciousness of guilt.
I don't recall that phrase. But she did specifically request, she said, if it's admitted, then I would request a very specific limiting instruction, and the court did not do so.
Thank you.
The approach that Mr. Eccles is encouraging this court to take is consistent with essentially all other jurisdictions, with the possible exception of the Eighth Circuit. The Eighth Circuit views such evidence as direct evidence of guilt. I contest that conclusion that it's direct evidence of guilt, because the jury needs to interpret, is this conduct even related to what the underlying charges are? It's conceivable that somebody could engage in threatening conduct regarding an unrelated matter. So it's hard to say how it's direct evidence. But more importantly, even in the Eighth Circuit, a limiting instruction is given when such evidence is admitted. And that obviously did not happen here. Unless there are further.
And did you ask for a limiting instruction in the motion in limine? Was that part of that?
She did so orally. When she, right after she discussed Hartman, she said, if it's deemed admissible under Hartman, then I would request a very specific limiting instruction. There are no further questions. I can reserve the remainder
counsel
of my time.
Counsel, was the proposed instructions to the jury presented to counsel prior to administering the limited instructions to the jury?
I don't believe so, because this was occurring on the first. She filed the motion, I believe, 2 days before trial started, and then this colloquy was occurring the same day the voir dire started, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, but before jury instructions were given, were the proposed jury instructions given to counsel?
I don't recall.
Thank you.
Well, good morning, Mr. Cummings.
Morning. Chief Justice, good morning, Justices. Your Honors, I'd like to start with the purposes of the rules of evidence, Rule 102. And the purpose of the rules of evidence is to find truth in a just manner. And that rule specifically advises that the common law is used and should be looked to construe the rules of evidence. The rules of evidence should be interpreted consistent with common law. And under common law, dating back to cases that I found back to at least 1912, this court has acknowledged and recognized that consciousness of guilt evidence is admissible. It's admissible because it's its own type of evidence. It's not other act evidence. The state submits that it's a needless muddying of the waters if this court starts to analyze consciousness of guilt evidence under a 404 analysis. It's not needed. A 404 analysis is needed to determine admissibility of other acts evidence. It's already been determined by this court for over 100 years that this type of evidence, consciousness of guilt evidence, is admissible.
Why are these not other acts? They have nothing to do with the underlying charges, other than the fact that after he was indicted and pled not guilty, he apparently engaged in witness intimidation. So why are they not other acts?
Well, consciousness of guilt evidence are directly related to the charges. They are not other acts in the sense of we're trying to show a character trait and prove a propensity. That's what 404 deals with.
Were there anything in these witness intimidation communications that would be tantamount to an admission of it, did you think, in of his involvement? Like if he would have said, someone ought to intimidate one of these witnesses because, you know, they saw me walking out of this location, you know, that would be like tantamount to an admission. I agree with you. That's not another act. It's got its own separate. But what specifically in the witness intimidation indicated consciousness of guilt, not only of the witness intimidation, but set aside witness. It's a separate crime. They should be prosecuted for that, innocent or not of the underlying charges. What in those communications was probative of the other cases?
Well, the specificity of the threats, the nickname used on the wall, the person called out in writing on the wall was Mr. Bishop. He understood that. He understood the meaning of the nickname that was used to sign it. The letters that were intercepted were the witnesses, you know, to this unfortunate happening. The circumstances, the context, shows that it goes to this case. It's directly related to this case. It's not another act that was committed prior that, you know, we're trying to show some type of propensity in a character. That's not what this is. It never was. This was clearly, and it's not a conclusive presumption by any means. It's just probative of this. It makes it more likely than not that this might have happened, and that's why, because it is direct evidence of the crime charged, it's considered to be admissible. The admissibility issue has been determined by this court for over 100 years. And I want to emphasize that I think the tools are still available to any defendant in a situation like this. The defendant can request a limiting instruction. 403 is always available and must always be utilized to weigh if the prejudice is indeed unfair. But that's later. That's after the admissibility is determined. And because this is of the type of nature of the evidence it is, consciousness of guilt evidence, it's just as a matter of law, as a matter of common law.
It's admissible. I understand that point. It makes sense. But so then what's the objection of using 404B? These clearly are other acts. Why not put it through a 404B analysis? There are other acts. This is a permissible purpose. The court has said that this is a permissible purpose. So 404B is satisfied. You have to do the 403 analysis, which you have to do for all evidence, not just 404B evidence.
Right.
So the only change, I guess, would be, it's not really a change, is there's certain notice requirements in 404B, but no one's complaining about that here. So the only other possible difference would be, ordinarily judges should give limiting instructions for 404B evidence, but judges, in appropriate situations, should give limiting instructions for other evidence. So what's the downside of treating this like evidence of other bad acts, which is evidence of another bad act?
Well, from the state's perspective, the downside is 404B will be misapplied and misconstrued, and that's illustrated in this case.
By whom? By whom? Misapplied by whom?
By advocates for the defense, or by judges that apply it. And for my example is just the two, the concurrence and the dissent below. They both ran this consciousness of guilt evidence through a 404 analysis, and they each would have kicked it out. And that represents a sea change in Ohio law. Ohio law has admitted this type of evidence for over 100 years. It's consciousness of guilt evidence. It's not other acts evidence. That's why they want this run through a 404 paradigm, because they get the benefit of maybe every once in a while they're going to get this consciousness of guilt evidence declared inadmissible. And that's of course what the defendant would want.
So you're saying the Hartman, this court's decision in Hartman-Smith didn't suddenly change the
not at all
of consciousness of guilt evidence.
Correct. Hartman is a great survey of the law of other acts evidence, but the state's point is this is not other acts evidence. It's other acts evidence in a way, but as I think you said in the decision, Justice DeWine, this type of evidence can always have multiple purposes. Any attorney can argue that an act can be this, it can show that, it can demonstrate this, it can, be probative of that. But that's going to be true. But the fact that consciousness of guilt evidence can be portrayed as some type of 404 evidence doesn't mean that it has to be run through that analysis to be admissible. It's not subject to that analysis.
Is the sequence of this evidence...
I'm sorry?
Is the sequence, the timing of this consciousness of guilt evidence should that be taken into consideration to make it distinguishable from typical other acts? Usually in other acts evidence, we have that the state tries to present bad acts that preceded the offense for which right. the defendant is being convicted or tried. In this case, so we have something that happened after indictment, after. So is that timing something we should look at? Is it relevant?
It's not relevant to the admissibility question, but it is relevant. That kind of reinforces the state's point that this is a different type of evidence, because other acts evidence is often called prior conduct or prior acts. Often, and more likely than not, consciousness of guilt evidence or witness intimidation evidence is going to be happening after the crime charged. And that's why this is evidence of a different nature. It's not governed by 404, and the state's nervous to concede that, yeah, well, let's run this through a Hartman 404 analysis, because many times it's very foreseeable that that will result in a trial judge holding this evidence inadmissible, where, as a matter of course, it's been admissible in Ohio for over 100 years as consciousness of guilt evidence.
But with evidence, though, under the rules of evidence, every relevant bit of evidence is admissible. So the key question is the relevancy question. And that's what the whole rules of evidence spend eons discussing, to make sure that we're complying with basically rules of fairness
right.
for a fair trial in a court. So I think what you're advocating, am I right, that just stick with those cases, don't have to think about them anymore, don't have to run them through the questions that relate to relevancy. If this case says they're admissible, they're admissible. I mean, why wouldn't we? Because this really, as you said, it wasn't something prior, it was something substantive, but the rule says it can't be used for showing that a person acted in accordance with character, and the it is either crime, wrong, or act. And the rule goes to admissibility, which again goes to whether or not it's relevant. So are you wanting us to just completely ignore 404B for everything, or just when it comes to bad acts?
When it comes to consciousness of guilt evidence, ignore 404 completely. It has no bearing on the admissibility of this type of evidence. 404 is for other acts evidence, not of the ilk of a consciousness of guilt evidence. It is of different nature. The nature of the evidence is different. It's so, direct evidence of the crime charged. It's not trying to link something that somebody did and say from this, the trait, the character, it shows he's a bad guy. Yeah, let's put it in for it. That's not the type of evidence this is. This is direct evidence of the charged crime.
Except the only thing I'm concerned about is that the prosecutor said, now you'll know the real Eccles. I mean,
I understand.
And the jury could take that to fit under Rule 404B.
That's a good point. I understand your point. But that could have been objected to, and a limiting instruction maybe should have been given in a sense like that. But it doesn't affect the admissibility of the evidence itself. The evidence of consciousness of guilt, witness intimidation, flight from the scene of a crime, that is a unique type of evidence that is admissible. Now, I think it can be misargued, and if it's argued in a way that says, hey, he's a bad guy, let's find him guilty because he's a bad guy, that should be objected to. A limiting instruction can be given. But let's keep in mind that these remedies are already available to the defendant. I mean, we have the 403 always has to be weighed. Limiting instructions can always be requested, and if appropriate, they have to be given under evidence rule, I think, 105.
Well, so, counsel, going back to Justice DeWine's opening comment here this morning, he raised the issue of the lack of a limited instruction in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Could you address that? Lack of a limited instruction, particularly when there was an oral request for it at the beginning of this proceeding.
Yes, I would direct this court's attention to this court's decision in State versus Williams, where it was held that because the evidence at issue was consciousness of guilt evidence, a jury instruction was not required. That is the law, and it's, as far as the state is aware, it's still good law in Ohio, and it was, I think that was Justice Stratton,
Pre-Hartman.
Pre-Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the unique nature of this type of evidence.
Would it be error for a trial court to give such a limiting instruction?
I think it may or may not be, depending upon the circumstances and the context. I think it's always available to the defendant to request it. It's always going to be subject to appellate review if the decision to give or not give it was incorrect. But the point is, this is the approach taken by many of the federal court decisions that the concurrence below referenced. Many of the federal courts, they hold consciousness of guilt evidence is admissible, and then the federal courts go on to indulge in a 403 analysis, or they discuss that it's not a problem in this case because a jury instruction was given. So the approach that the federal courts are using is really one that can be used in Ohio, and it's available, and I think it is often used in Ohio. But the point is, if this court throws out 100 plus years of jurisprudence, ignores common law, ignores its own precedents, not only, you know, pre-1980, but post-1980, you know, the rules of evidence, it's a huge sea change. It's not a minor tweaking of things.
So in Hartman, and I'm at paragraph 22 of the opinion, and it says, evidence rule 404B does, however, allow evidence of the defendant's other crimes, wrongs, or acts to be admitted, and I quote, for other purposes, such as proof of motive, opportunity, intent, preparation, plan, knowledge, identity, or absence of mistake or accident. So I look at that string of things as examples. It's not a closed category. So there are other things there. So the opinion italicizes the words for other purposes.
Mm-hmm.
How is this not for an other purpose as captured by 404B in that catch-all language?
Well, because it's the rule, I think 102, the rule of evidence, the rules of evidence that says the purpose of the evidence rules, they are to be construed in line with common law, and they are not to be applied against common law unless the rule itself indicates that a change is intended. And in Rule 404, there's no, you know, description or intent expressed that we want to change the law and consciousness of guilt evidence.
But in Ritchie, Williams, and Lange, the court never discussed 404B. So can you say that the issue was not raised before that court at that time?
Well, the state would say that it wasn't discussed because it wasn't relevant. It's not the law to be applied. Sometimes this court has done a 404 analysis for consciousness of guilt and come to the right conclusion. I think State versus
cases,
Gordon was that. And I think
cases.
That was one of yours, Justice DeWine.
It was Tibbetts. That was one of them, and Gordon. But if the issue wasn't presented to the court in Ritchie, Williams, and Lange, how can you say that those cases demonstrate that 404B is not relevant when the evidence is consciousness of guilt, if it wasn't before the court?
Well, I can't say definitively, I can't speak for the writers of those opinions. I could assume that it wasn't raised because the authors didn't find it relevant. I think it's very instructive that because there's no mention of 404 in many of these cases, it should be very instructive to this court. It's not required. It's not necessary. It's not the type of evidence that we're talking about here.
I think it's fair to say that it hasn't been required, but it's, I guess, arguably being raised kind of for the first time now in our analysis, maybe now that there's been some clarity with Hartman. Hartman and Smith, but to the Chief's point, the descriptive under 404 isn't all-inclusive, and so you know, does it, is justice better served by putting it through 404 analysis as well as 403?
Well, that is ultimately for this court to determine. I mean, this court certainly can make a ruling to that effect, yes.
Sure. But I'm asking you, Matt, your opinion.
From the state's perspective, I think the court to do so would be overruling 100 years of its precedent in acknowledging that this is a unique type of evidence that's just admissible as a matter of course.
But have we really done that when the 404? I guess it would be different if those three cases, Ritchie and the other cases, said 404. A 404 analysis is not appropriate for this type of evidence.
This court has said that in some cases, and the federal courts have said that in some cases. They say specifically a 404 is not analysis is not needed because this is a different type of evidence.
So just again, are we talking about anything other than should there be a limiting instruction? Because we keep talking about 404 analysis like it's this strange, weird, other thing out there, but it seems like all we're arguing about is whether or not there's a limiting instruction. Am I missing something here?
No, I think you're right. I think the issue is kind of encapsulated in State versus Williams. I mean, that was this court actually saying there's no instruction needed because this is a consciousness of guilt evidence type case. Now, the remedy they're ultimately seeking is, you know, some type of limiting instruction to be mandated, like a 404 analysis would do. And I think that is what one of the reasons they want to take it through the 404 analysis. The state doesn't think that's required because I think that it's already, the rules as they exist now address this problem, I guess is the bottom line. This court doesn't have to throw out its precedent. It doesn't have to expand the scope of 404 to include consciousness of guilt evidence. That's not required. If this court wants to do it, it certainly can. If it feels this is the way to have the rules, you know, justly determine the truth, that's certainly within this court's purview. But I think it's just important to emphasize it would represent a huge change in Ohio law.
One more question. In the language that the Chief Justice just read you in that second paragraph in Hartman, paragraph 22, the very language and says the admissibility of other acts evidence pursuant to evidence rule 404B is a question of law. So I think what you're saying is you don't really trust the courts to reach the right decision on that when it's being used for consciousness of guilt.
No, I wouldn't put it that way. I would just say I would expect that the courts to follow the law as it's been for over 100 years, that consciousness of guilt evidence is admissible. You don't have to run it through a 404 analysis to see if it might be. We already know it is. This court has said it time after time after time after time that it is admissible. Maybe it needs to be limited by an instruction, or maybe it's too probative and that can be addressed. But the admissibility issue, running it through 404, is not appropriate. It's just not required, and it would result in a needless expansion of 404. And I
Thank
think
you.
It certainly muddy the waters. I'm sorry. I see I've gone way over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jaquith, you have 3 minutes, 31 seconds.
I'd like to push back on the idea that this is going to overrule 100 years of precedent. As explained in the briefing, Ritchie and Hartman can stand side by side. Traditional consciousness of guilt analysis can apply when the conduct does not involve threats of violence or intimidation or anything along those lines that can be used to demonstrate propensity. So the ruling here won't affect, for example, a flight from justice case or something along those lines. So it's a much narrower subset than the state suggests.
What about Mr. Cummings' assertion that we have had instances of threats of violence, witness intimidation, that has been seen as consciousness of guilt, that didn't go through this analysis, that didn't require a limiting instruction, and that have been upheld by the appellate courts and this court? So did in your mind, did Hartman and Smith resurrect or change the character of this type of evidence?
Well, I think in those earlier cases, the appellants weren't raising the 404B issue. And then you combine that with the guidance that Hartman has given the courts in Ohio, I think we're in a different place than when those decisions were issued.
Okay.
And if I may, I'd like to suggest a rule that is not inconsistent with the proposition of law, that perhaps is a little clearer, a little narrowing to address the state's concerns, which would be evidence of arguable witness intimidation that may tend to establish a propensity toward violence must be subjected to the frameworks set forth in State versus Hartman. And that would be the rule that Mr. Eccles would be requesting in this case, or a potential rule. And to address your question, Justice Stewart, about the timing of the conduct, I think often it's referred to prior act evidence. Obviously, the evidence rule itself is written in the phrasing other act evidence. So if it's conduct that can be used, as was here, to demonstrate propensity, then I don't think it matters whether it occurred before the conduct, as in Hartman, or after the charged conduct, as here.
In your merit brief, you cite the transcript, volume 12, pages 259 through 260, as the request for other acts limiting instruction.
Yes. She says if this evidence is admitted, then I would request a very specific limiting instruction.
Is there also dialogue right before the request for a limiting instruction that the court undertake a 404B analysis?
I believe that the timing of the request for jury instruction is within two or three pages of her discussion of Hartman and why Hartman should be applied in this case.
Thank you.
Is it typical for counsel to actually, I mean, do you think the defense counsel or the state would have the responsibility to tell the court how to analyze the questions of law beyond what you'd put in a brief? I mean, you don't have to preserve that, do you?
I think she properly preserved the issue here by raising Hartman in front of the court and the court declining to follow it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement and you will receive a decision from the court. Marshall, would you please close the court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.